You know, I was just thinking, I was kind of turning around trying to see if I could find him. I don't know if Jack Cost is here. Is he here today? I'm sorry that he's not here. You know, when Sally and the kids and I came 22 years ago, if I remember correctly, we had Jack playing the piano, and our backup was Jack playing the piano. And so when Jack Cost went on vacation, I begged, borrowed, and stole from other pastors from their church so that we could have an instrument playing on a Sunday morning. And then today, I lost count of all the instruments that are on this platform right now and the people that are playing them. Isn't it awesome? It's so great. And I appreciate the variety. Today we've kind of had a confluence of two services. We normally have an 8 o'clock and a 10:45, and our 8 o'clock is a traditional service, and our 10:45 is a little more contemporary. And so we've kind of gotten a taste of both of those today, and had our worship leaders, the people who are playing instruments and singing from both services, kind of join us into one. And so I just am so thankful for each one of them and for the variety that we have every week, but we got to see it all in one place today, this morning. Well, you know, today I want to try to paint a picture, and I'm not an artist with a paintbrush, but I'm going to try to do it with words today. And I want to paint a picture that will help you to see the vision that God has placed on our hearts as a staff, and the vision that we believe God has for our church from this day forward. We have so much, you know, to celebrate. As Scott said, 80 years is a long time. I mean, 80 years takes us back to 1937. And that's when the very beginnings of this church took place. And for us, I think, to be able to look ahead and see what God has for us, it's important for us to take a quick look back at what He has done and how He even started this work. Because, you see, this was an unusual, at least in my mind, from my experience, this was an unusual church start in 1937. Because it wasn't a pastor who decided that Busty needed a church, and so, you know, that pastor kind of put all the elements together, got people to help start it. That wasn't how this church started at all. This church started because there were four families who had a vision for something in this community to have an impact, not just even on the greater area, but especially here in Busty, but also beyond that as well. But there was a man by the name of Emil Hazeltine, who was a bachelor, as far as I know, and he was one of those four family groups. And then there were the Larsons and the Lunds and the Thors. And those four families were the ones who had this vision of a church here in Busty. And all of those families actually attended the First Church of God, which is still, well, physically it's not in existence anymore because it burned down on Christmas night. But that church is still meeting on Faulkner Street. And they're getting ready to build a new facility with the insurance money that they've got from the fire that took place on Christmas. It's going to be a beautiful facility. And I look forward to us joining them one day to dedicate that facility, and maybe some other times as well where we can worship together with them. But these four families all attended there. Now, you might, you know, think, well, what was the big deal? I mean, it's not that far of a drive, you know, into town, really. But remember, we're in 2017, and that was 1937. It was different then. Now, not that I have great experience and can tell you about that, okay? Because I haven't been around that long. But what I can tell you from the stories that I've heard is that these families drove in cars that aren't quite the cars that we have today, on roads that aren't quite the roads we have today, in the dead of winter when they didn't really have the snow removal equipment that they have today. In fact, one of these families, my understanding is, at least for a while, they took a team of horses and a buggy into town to church. And so if you can picture our winters without the snow removal that we have today. I mean, there was snow removal. It just wasn't as quick and efficient and pushed it off as far as it does today. If you can imagine roads that aren't repaved every few years like ours are, you can kind of maybe get a taste of the struggle that was for families to go from here into Jamestown, especially with the winters that we have. And so they determined, you know, we ought to have a church here in Bustai. So these four families went to their pastor, Pastor Powell, and asked if he and his wife, who was also ordained, would help them get this work started, which, you know, just in and of itself, and when I think about this, and guys, you can appreciate this too, I think that is so cool that they just didn't decide, you know, we're just going to start our own church and get our own gig going and just whatever. We'll just leave these people behind. They went to the pastoral leadership of that church and said, look, we value what we have here, but we need something in Bustai because it's hard to get here. And can we have your blessing and your help in doing that? And I just think that is so awesome. And so they honored that request, and Bessie Powell came and helped them start this work. And these people were determined, and I don't know, in fact, I'm just going to ask real quick. I had this conversation with Gail Stevens earlier, so I'm going to get to this part that we talked about, wherever you're at, Gail, in a moment. But I just want to ask, first of all, is there anybody here, and I know there is, but how many of you are direct descendants from those four families? Would you just stand right now if you're here today? And that would include you, so, and you, and I want you to honor these people and their families, because without them, we're not here today. I knew you were coming, Bessie, but I didn't see you till now, so thank you for coming today. So those families, I don't know if they used this phrase that we use around here today, and that phrase is, hey, we'll do whatever it takes to reach somebody for Christ. But, you know, I don't know if they actually said those words, but they lived those words. Because, you know, starting a church is not easy. And, you know, they didn't have a ready-made building like we have here. And, you know, they didn't have all the pieces in place. They had to put all the pieces in place. It took great organization, great determination to make that church happen. And so this church, they were so determined to make it happen that they were willing to meet in houses. They met in storefronts. They met at a campground. They temporarily rented a church building and used it. I don't know if it was in the afternoons that the Swedish Lutheran church where you met, afternoons or evenings, because there was another service happening at a traditional time in the morning. So they did whatever it took. And then they even rented a house that they converted into a church for a few years. And then, I don't know if they just got tired of moving or whatever, but they decided, you know, we need to buy some property and get a place that's ours so we don't have to do this every few years or every week or whatever. And so some property was purchased on Southwestern Drive. It's the property on which the Living Waters Church now sits. And that building only sits there because a tornado took away the building that was originally built by the folks from this church. It was a brick building that I think in the mid-80s, a tornado completely annihilated. By then, we had already moved here because on Easter Sunday of 1984, this church worshiped for the very first time in this room, in this building. But for almost 30 years, that church was so determined to do whatever it took to fulfill the vision that they believed God had placed on their hearts to start this thing called Bustai Church of God. And then in 1955, they finally got their own place and were able to move into that place at that point. Well, after Bessie Powell's leadership and these four families and their leadership launched this church, I was just kind of going back and reviewing, because it's been 5 years since our 75th that I've thought about these things, that at least at this kind of detail. But I saw something I didn't see 5 years ago, I was just kind of going through and reminding myself of who had been pastors of this church over the years, and I just started counting, and I was telling the group last night that I got to my name, and my name was number 13, and I went, oh, I didn't know that until now. And I just got to thinking, you know, for those who really believe in 13 being bad luck, that might answer a lot of questions for you that you've had over the last 22 years, really. But I'm the 13th lead pastor in our church. And then when I came, there had been a part-time youth pastor that was here for a few weeks. He had already accepted a position at another church and was only around about a month, I think, from the time that we got here. And so we went a while with just being me, and we brought on some other staff members. But I'm going to tell you that we today have a staff that I'm really proud of, and I'm excited to have not just be coworkers, colleagues, but they're my friends, they're my brothers and sisters. They're like siblings to me. I mean, I love them as I love my family. I mean, they are such an important part of who we are. Our families have grown to love each other like we're related, you know? And, you know, and it starts, Diane Jewell, almost 20 years ago, this spring it'll be 20 years that she came on board to be my administrative assistant. And that's just great testimony that she's put up with me for 20 years, really. I mean, but she's golden. She has just been so important to this church. And then 7 years later, Scott and Danica came on board. And Danica wasn't on staff at the time, but she was an integral part of what Scott was doing. And she was very involved even before she officially came on staff. And then shortly after that, Bonnie Moore came on staff to be our custodian, and her husband has jumped into the fray with her, and he's here often. It's not surprising at all to see him around here, scrubbing the Family Life Center floor, just doing whatever, and always coming to my office and saying, is there anything you need me to do? Just unbelievable people. And then just recently, this last July, we invited Gene Brown to come on staff as our children's pastor. And of course, Gene's no stranger to us. In fact, she's been around with her husband, Tim, for 10 years, serving faithfully here. And so the team that we have together is a team that we've been around each other for a long time. And that just is really rare. I'm just going to tell you that it's just not normal for staffs to stay together that long in a church. And I don't know how else to convey that, but it's a testimony to you. It's a testimony to what God has placed on our hearts, that He has put us together to do some significant things, I'm confident of. But you know, today I don't really want to focus on the pastoral leadership. I don't want to focus on the paid staff of our church, because really I would rather shift our focus somewhere else. Because I want to shift our focus to you, to the people who make this church really happen. Because, yeah, I mean, we're leaders, and we kind of, you know, help to get things going and such, but you are the people who make it happen. And that's been the truth. That's been the way it is from the very beginning. Because, as I said, it was not a pastor who started this church. It was people who, like you, were seeking God and saw His vision for this community. And so as I was preparing for this day, I had this, I don't know what else to call it, but it's a wonderful life moment. Okay, you've seen that movie, most of us probably. And you remember when George Bailey just wished he had never been born. You remember that? You know, and so he got his wish, and he ended up being in a town that didn't know who he was, and everybody was kind of, you know, it was like stranger danger, you know, when he came around, because nobody knew who he was, and he was acting like he knew everybody, because he did, but they didn't know him, because he had never been born. And so I began to think about this, and I thought, you know what? What if Emil Hazeltine and the Larsons and the Lunds and the Thors, what if they had not been obedient to the vision that God had given them? What if they had not decided to work together to make this church come to be? What if there were never a Bus-Stuy Church of God? How would our community be different? I mean, would it be better? Would it be worse? And you know, as I was thinking about that question, I got to thinking, that's a really important question for us if we're going to look ahead to our future. You know, a little over a year ago, I really sensed God directing us to make the theme of teaching and all that we do this year, who is our neighbor? And you see that on the wall. We've talked about it all year long. You just heard it in so many different ways. And I'm just going to tell you, I don't know that there's a great deal of suspense about it, but I'm just going to tell you anyway, that's going to be our theme next year too. And you know, the kind of the word that God has given each one of us as we talked about this a few weeks ago, you know, I don't know what God's going to do in 2019, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's still our focus, because God has got us working in some ways that we're just now beginning to scratch the surface. And I just can't imagine, as significant as some of these things are, that God's going to say, well, let's do something else now. So don't be surprised if that's not our focus for a while. You know, we began the year looking really closely at the passage in Luke 10 that we're all familiar with. We know it as the story of the Good Samaritan. And we spent January just kind of going through that in a very detailed kind of a way. And as we looked at that story, you knew the story, but we kind of picked it apart. Well, today I want to read to you a different version, one with which you're probably not as familiar. But I want to tell you that story today, the story of the Good Samaritan revisited. One day a priest was walking down a country road when he heard cries coming from the ditch off the side of the road. Help me! Help me, please. And the priest stopped and he strained his neck, trying to see into that ditch. And then he called across the road, hey, what happened to you? Well, I was traveling to town and I was attacked and beaten and robbed. Please help me. I can't move. The voice responded. Well, the priest paused for a moment. And then he yelled back to the voice in the ditch. Hey, listen, I'll tell you what. There's this guy named the Good Samaritan. He always helps people in need. And he should be coming down this road anytime now. And he'll help you. Because, you know, I don't know anything about first aid, and I don't want to do anything to make your situation worse. But wait, you don't understand. I. But it was too late, because the priest had already gone on his way. And then another man came walking along the road. This man was a Levite. Help me, please. And the Levite looked back and forth. Who is that? Where's this voice coming from? It's me over here. And the Levite says, you talking to me? He goes, yeah, I was traveling to town and I was attacked, beaten, and robbed, and I need your help. Oh, said the Levite, still looking into the ditch. You do sound like somebody who could use some help. Wait a minute. Did you say attacked, beaten, and robbed? What a coincidence. You know, that reminds me of a story a fellow named Jesus once told. You ever heard of him? Yeah, I know the story, but can you please help me? Well, you know, I'd like to, but actually I'm in kind of a rush, but I'm sure somebody else will be along shortly to help you. Someone called the, what is that guy's name? A Good Samaritan, that's it. He'll be along soon. You know, this is a busy road, but he always comes down this road, so he'll be by to help you. But couldn't you help me? I'm feeling very weak and I can't. Hey, look, I'm sorry. I'm not the Good Samaritan, man. I'm just the Levite. And if I helped you, it would mess the whole story up, right? You don't want me to mess the whole story up, do you? Well, no, I don't want you to mess up the story, but please, I just need your help. Wait, come back. Hey, patience there, champ. I'm sure the Good Samaritan will be along shortly. And he went on his way. Still moaning in the ditch, the man said, I don't know if I'm going to last much longer. But then another man came walking down the road, and he ran over to the ditch where he heard this moaning. And he goes, "Oh my goodness, what happened to you?" "Well, I was traveling down a road when I was attacked, beaten, and robbed, and two other men have come by, but they haven't helped me. And can you please help me? I can't move." Well, the traveler peered in at this wounded man lying in the ground in front of him, and finally he goes, "Wait a minute. You look familiar. Where are you from?" I'm from Samaria." "You by chance have a nickname?" "Yeah, well, some people call me the Good Samaritan because I helped an injured man on a road a while back." "Yes, yes. Well, sir, you're never going to guess who I am. I'm the guy you helped. All this time I've been looking for you because I want to pay you back. I can't believe this. I can't wait to tell my friends I finally found you and I'm finally going to be able to help you now. I can finally pay you back. Sir, look here. These are 2 silver coins, exactly what you gave that innkeeper. And now I can give it back to you. I've been holding these all this time looking for you. Here they go." And he set them down into the ditch next to the man. And this grateful man, who had himself once been attacked, beaten, and robbed, walked away, whistling merrily down the road, feeling so good that he had finally repaid his debt. "Wait, wait, I don't want your money." But it was too late. And the Good Samaritan died quietly in the ditch by the side of the road. Jesus told the original story of the Good Samaritan for us to struggle with a question, at least a question that we kind of put words to that goes something like this. So what does love require? And that was kind of the purpose of the story, was to address that issue. And that's what we've been kind of struggling with ourselves as we endeavor to honor him with our lives. But the thing is, typically when we ask that question, what we're really asking is, "God, what do I need to do so that you and I are good?" And our goal is to make sure that our lives are right with God. Because that's exactly what was on the mind of the man who originally asked Jesus the question. In fact, we find it in Luke chapter 10, verse 25. Here's what he asked him. He said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And you notice, he says, "What must I do so that I can get eternal life?" So Jesus answered his question. He says, "Well, what does the law of Moses say? How do you read it?" And so, again, this guy is asking a very, you know, personal question. He's not really thinking about too many other people than himself. He's saying, "What's required of me so that I can have eternal life?" So Jesus asks him, "Okay, so, you know, what's the law of Moses say? How do you read it?" Here's how the man replied. "Well, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength and your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself," right? And Jesus said, "Right. If you do this, you will live." But there's this little footnote that Luke puts in here, and it's that the man was not really satisfied with the fact that he'd got the answer right, and wanting to make sure that he was justified in the way he was living his life and wanted to continue living his life, he said, "So then who's my neighbor? Who's the neighbor we're talking about here?" And of course, this is the point at which Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, I don't know if it's reasonable to expect you, for me to expect you to remember this, but back in January, we talked about the fact that, contrary to popular opinion, the Samaritan in the story is not put there to reflect the ideal you and me on our best day. But the symbolism of this story is that the Good Samaritan is really Jesus, who has come to all of our rescue. Whether we love him, whether we're, you know, whatever, you know, about him, or whether we despise him. Jesus did whatever it took so that we could experience redemption, so that we could experience life, so that we could have a life. And so the Samaritan in the story is really Jesus. He's the hero of the story. But when Jesus gets to the end of the story, he asks this really important question. He says, now, which of the three would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? And it's an important question, although probably the guy's like, okay, is this a trick question? Because this is pretty easy, I think. And so he says, the one who showed him mercy? And Jesus said, yes. And then he said these words that forever should change every single one of us in this room. Now go and do the same. Because this, my friends, is where the rubber meets the road. This is how we honor Jesus with our lives, by loving like Jesus loves. You see, that parable that I told you, the revisited one, the grateful man in the parable, we're like him sometimes. We just kind of miss the point. Because love is more than words. It's more than satisfying our monetary debt. It's more than just, whew, glad I finally got that taken care of, and you know, I feel better now. It's more than doing what seems to be easy and convenient. See, what love means, and Jesus showed us this, is that love means that we get down into the ditch to give the person what they really need. And that's not always what they're asking for, but it's giving them what they really need. It means sometimes getting dirty, and it means sometimes being very inconvenienced. And so I want to tell you something today that I believe is really important. In fact, I believe it's the key to unlocking God's vision for us in our future. In fact, it's the one thing that if you miss everything else, I hope you get this. And here's what it is. If we want to attach ourselves to Jesus' name, we need to study his life and live the same. If we want to be attached to his name, then we need to know who he is and do the same. See, if we're going to count ourselves as Christ followers, we need to love like Jesus. No ifs, ands, or buts. When we think about what it means to honor Jesus with our lives, and we see that every time we walk out of this room, we see it every time you look at the front of your bulletin cover, you see it every time you might get a letter from the church, it's just everywhere, it's in the newsletter, it's just everything that we print, it's on our website. That if you think about what it means to honor Jesus with our lives, we often think about things like, well, I probably ought to follow the Ten Commandments, that'd probably be a good thing, good way to do it. And that is, for sure. You know, if there are people who are in need, giving to them would probably be a good thing. Yeah, I would agree. And probably shouldn't talk bad about people. That probably wouldn't be a good thing. No, that probably wouldn't be. You know, and we just think about things like that. But I don't know if we often think about why we should do those things. Like, you know, one of the commandments that seems to come up a lot, you know, is the one about bearing false witness or not lying, right? So like, you know, we all know that it's really not a good thing to lie. It's good to tell the truth. Would we all agree on that, you know? But have we ever asked, why should I do that? Why should I tell the truth instead of to lie? You know, is it because we might get caught, you know, and get ourselves in more trouble if we get caught lying? Well, if we're only thinking about ourselves, then that would probably be the rationale. But that's not why Jesus made this a standard for telling the truth. Here's why we need to tell the truth. Because when we tell the truth, it gives worth to the person or to others to whom we're speaking. It gives them worth. It ascribes to them worth. Now, in contrast, if I were to lie to you, what I'm saying to you is, you're not really worth that much to me. I don't really care that much about you. I'm actually going to protect myself at your expense. So you don't really matter that much. So whether we get caught or not, lying breaks our relationship. And Jesus said, whatever you do or don't do to others, you have or you haven't done them to me. So like if I lie to you, I'm lying to Jesus. If I tell you the truth, I'm telling the truth to Jesus. So why should we be generous to others? Why should we do something for somebody who might have a need? So God will be generous to us? Well, you know, if we're only thinking about ourselves, that's probably the rationale. But I want to tell you why we should be generous to others, and you might want to write this down. It's a little bit complicated, so I'm going to say it slowly, okay? Because I want you to make sure you get all of this. We are generous to others because it helps people. Now, did you get that? I'll go slower, okay? We need to be generous to others because it helps people, period. That's just it. We don't have to make this complicated. We don't have to make this difficult. Why did Jesus die on the cross for us? Because it helped us. Because it's what we needed. He didn't do that so thinking, well, if I do this, God's going to do something really cool for me when I get back to him, you know, and make it all about himself. No, he was the ultimate servant. He said, no, I wish there was another way, but there's not. And this is what's going to help the people I love. And so I'm going to be generous and give my life. So why should we be generous? Because it helps people. Why shouldn't we talk bad about other people? It's not really complicated either, because when we do that, it diminishes their significance. And the bottom line is, these are people for whom Jesus died. That's why we don't talk bad about other people. You know, I want to give you, like Jesus said, I came to give you a new covenant. That I am the new covenant. And it's so simple, but I want to encourage you to write it down. And here's what it is. Here's kind of in everyday plain language. If it's not best for them, it's sin. If it's not best for them, it's sin. He said, this is my commandment. Love each other in the same way I have loved you. He did what was best for us, not what was best for him, I promise you. So what does love require of us? To love like Jesus. So how can we do this? And this is where we get to this vision for our future, and this is where it comes into play. And so I want to just kind of tell you, in some ways it's going to be kind of general, in some other ways I'm going to be more specific, but here's where we're headed, folks. We have a group of people that I kind of just put it out there to everybody, and this was the group that came together for this, but we don't even know what our name is, really. Just kind of, we have like three or four, I think, names that we've called ourselves, but community outreach group or something like that. But, you know, we had some focus groups, and I spoke last summer about some areas that just we're trying to explore and figure out how are we going to have the greatest impact in our community. And, you know, we've looked at so many different things, but I'll tell you what, at the end of April, it really started coming together for us. And we didn't even know it until later on into the summer when we started putting pieces of the puzzle together and it really started coming together. But here's where we're headed. We believe, this group, that our niche, the area that nobody is doing anything with in our community, no church is doing with in our community in an organized way, is that we want to serve the terminally ill and do what is needed for that person or that family. Now, you know, if somebody were to come and ask you, you know, is that like a church growth strategy? That probably wouldn't be real smart, would it? You know? So that's not why we're doing this. We're doing this because we believe it'll help people. I can't even give you a lot of specifics yet because we're hoping that we're going to have some of that in about 2 weeks. We have a kind of a retreat, if you want to call it, that is scheduled for September 8th and 10th. And if you want to just write that down to be praying for us, we would just be so indebted to you for that. That would be a really important thing for you to do. But we are going to carve out a plan in a couple of weeks on how specifically we can do that without overwhelming us as a church. Because, you know, in some ways it's a little easier to focus on a neighborhood of a few blocks by a few blocks, because then you know exactly like who you're dealing with and what you're dealing with there. But when you just make an audacious statement like we want to serve the terminally ill, man, those people are everywhere. They're all over the place, and that could easily be overwhelming. So we have a plan to develop a plan, and that's going to happen September 8th and 9th of next month. And after that, we will present to you how this is going to happen for our church and how you can be specifically involved. But it's one of the most tangible ways that we want to push forward with the viewpoint that we're trying to get people to see us through, that we are for Chautauqua. You know, I told you a few weeks ago, actually it's been more than a few weeks ago, but you know, if you were to go out and interview people all over the place and ask them, you know, what do you think of when you think of the church? I can just about guarantee you that what you're going to hear from people is what the church is against. You know, they're against this, and they're against that, and they're against this, and they don't like this either, and, ooh, don't even bring that one up, you know, in the church. And, you know, we need to change that perception. We need to change the perception so that people, when they think of the church, they think about what we're for, not what we're against. Because Jesus was for people. That's why he died on a cross for us. He so loved us that he gave his only son. Because he was for us. And if God is for us, we need to be for people as well. So another area that we're going to focus on is generosity. We are going to be generous. How are we going to do that? Well, there's a particular way that we want to focus on this. And again, there's going to be a lot of outgrowths to this as well. But in the month of November, we are going to do something called a Be Rich campaign. Now, some of you are sitting there going, really? Huh. I'm going to make sure I'm there because I'd like to be rich. Well, it's not quite what you think when I say be rich. You're going to be richer than the rich you can imagine if you participate fully in this. But this Be Rich campaign is about how we can be rich by being generous and how we can be rich in spirit. And what we're going to do, and we're going to tease you along probably from now till November with this thing and get you ready for this. But I want you to be thinking about this, and I've asked Gene Brown to share with the kids today about this as well, so that they can be thinking about this too. Because I want to see all of our church family, from the kids up to the adults, participate in this. We're going to ask you on the last Sunday of November to come to church that day and be prepared to write a check or put cash in a special offering. This isn't going to be the regular offering. This is going to be a special one. We want everybody to bring at least $39.95. $39.95. Now, why in the world would we ask you to do that? Because, you know, have you ever watched, like, I've gotten to a point where I don't watch much commercials anymore. I try to tape stuff because I don't like to watch commercials. But I watched some not too long ago. Do you know how much stuff is $39.95? And it's junk, right? I mean, you probably have stuff that was $39.95 that you could find if you dig through your closet hard enough or dig through your attic. You probably have lots of things that you bought for $39.95, right, or something like that. So we're going to have some fun with $39.95, but we just picked that number because it just sounds like a fun number, okay? But at the last Sunday of November, we're going to ask you to bring at least $39.95, not per family, per person. And here's what we're going to do. We have got together, and I'm not even going to reveal who they are because I'm going to protect their privacy, because they'll just be bombarded if I say who they are. We have a small group of people who are right now, as we speak, researching the nonprofits in our area, faith-based and otherwise. It doesn't have to be faith-based. We are trying to identify about 6 to 8 of the very best nonprofits that we have in our community that are getting it done as well as anybody else in this community. And our goal is that we want to give a significant amount of money to each one of those nonprofits. We are not going to put any of this money that you bring at the end of November in our bank account other than to just write checks from it. We are not going to keep any of it. We want to show in a really tangible way that we are for Chautauqua, not just with money, but as cheerleaders to say, what you're doing is great. Keep doing what you're doing. And all of that money is going to go to support 6 to 8 nonprofits in our area that are just getting it done. So if you have some ideas or some suggestions, if you're in charge of the nonprofit, don't tell it, you know, that probably isn't a good deal. But if you have some suggestions, please let us know, because we're certainly going to consider those. And hopefully by the end of September, we're going to hope to have those kind of ironed out. And during the month of November, we're going to have those people up here on our platform telling us a little bit more about what they do and why they're doing it so well. But on the last Sunday of November, just write it on your calendars. If you need to start saving pennies or whatever, or if you say, you know what, I don't want to stop at $39.95. I want to save, but I want to give something more. That'd be great, because maybe, you know, we can just bless them even more than what we're thinking in our minds that we can bless them. So that's what's one of the ways that we're going to work on being generous. Another vision that we have, and this one is really near and dear to our hearts on our staff, because one of the things that probably is the most difficult thing for us to observe and to kind of work with on a daily basis are our families that are really struggling or torn apart. And so we want to make resourcing marriages a priority in our church. We want to help marriages stay healthy and be much more proactive about it than what we've been in the past. And I'm going to tell you right off the bat, one of the things that we have on the schedule right now that we're going to do to kind of start with this whole initiative is that we have a marriage seminar that's going to be happening right here on September 29th. It's called Deep Love, and the hosts are Les and Leslie Parrott. It's going to be a live simulcast. We're going to show it right here in this room. You can invite anybody that you want. It's going to be totally free. Who knows? We might even have some popcorn or something just to make it kind of a party atmosphere, but I'm not promising that, but that's a possibility, okay? But please invite your friends. I don't care if they go to another church or if they don't go to church anywhere. That'd be great. Bring them. Absolutely going to be free. But we want to resource marriages, and this is where we're going to start. I asked in June, on June 11th, for some individuals who would help us to be marriage mentors, and I got about 3 couples' names. And if you aren't one of those couples and you're willing to do that, you can still come talk to me, because I just talked to my first couple that I'm going to be marrying next year, and I've already told them, I said, here's what my vision is, here's what my dream is, and they're excited about having one of you, a couple from this church, to be a part of their premarital counseling, and then just to be hanging out with them over the course of the year, inviting them over for dinner, maybe going to their house for dinner, going to a movie or something, just occasionally doing some things together, and just being a support to them as they get their marriage launched, hopefully in a very healthy way. So those are a couple ways we want to resource marriages. The next one is that we want to connect with children and their families. And not just by picking them up with a bus or a van like we've been doing on Wednesday nights. We'd like to expand that to Sunday mornings as well. But we're going to need more drivers. We're going to need more people take the time to get their CDL license, and I'll say what I've said all along. We'll pay for you to do it if you'll just do it and be willing to drive for the church. We'll take care of the cost of that. But we want to connect with these children and their families, even in their homes. One of the things that we brought Jean Brown on to do is, this is something Jean has done as a teacher for 10 years. She has been working for Head Start, and some of these same families that we pick up on Wednesday night, she has been teaching them. She has been in their homes. She has been building a relationship with them. She is going to be resourcing our children's workers, teaching them and showing them kind of how to do this, and be bringing them along with her and getting connected to these families in their homes, because we want to build a relationship with them. We don't want to just make this transaction where we pick them up, drop them off, and deal with them for an hour and a half. We want to have a relationship with these families. And so what is that going to mean? Well, I mean, it's going to mean doing things like what we did yesterday. We gave out 94 backpacks at Farmer Brown's, full of school supplies. There were, I think, only like 11 backpacks that weren't taken. And the only reason they weren't taken was that we wanted the kids, one of the requirements we had was that the parents had to be there with the kid, or the kids had to be with the parents to get a backpack, or we probably would have given all of those other ones away too. But we don't want it to be a transaction. We want a relationship with these families. We want to partner with schools. We've been doing that. We have a great partnership with Southwestern Schools. And I was a little concerned because the elementary principal and the high school principal both resigned after last year. And we just have a super relationship with both of them through Upward Basketball and otherwise. And I was just like, oh man, we got to start all over again. And I read Southwestern's newsletter today, and I know both of them that are coming in, and they have a great relationship with us as well through Upward and other places. So I'm so excited about being able to connect with that school. But it's not just that school that we want to partner with. We want all the schools in this area to see that we are for Chautauqua, that we're, you know, we want to work with them. We have some of the same goals that we want to accomplish, but we want to build a relationship. Through Upward Basketball, it's probably the most significant outreach that we have and have had for almost 10 years. And one of the things we've asked in times past and gotten zero response from, that I'm going to ask again today, is that we would love to have some of you who would be willing to adopt a team. And what that would mean is that on whether it's Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday that they practice, you would come for the hour that they practice and just kind of hang out with the parents, root the kids on from the bleachers, and get to know them a little bit. Maybe bring a snack occasionally to for the end of practice. Maybe even if the coach needed help with the devotional time, maybe you could help with that in the midway time during the practice. And all those materials are provided, by the way. But then also on Saturday, come to their game and root for them. Be their cheering section. But over time, you know, sitting with these families, building a relationship with them. There are so many families in Upward Basketball that are so far from God. And they just, I just think if they found out that we're normal people, we're just, you know, we're just like they are. We just happen to be a part of a church and we follow Jesus. But you could be a part of that. And you could help us out with that. And then the last thing, and as we did these focus groups, we heard this more than any other thing. When we asked you to describe what you thought of first when you thought of Bus-Tie Church of God, more than not, the answer was family. We want to stay connected as a church. We have an 8 o'clock, we have a 10:45 service. A lot of people said, can't we just have one? Some of you are going to leave today saying, see, we can do this. But I can tell you, there's a lot of people that are out of town right now. And I'm just telling you, we could do it, but almost every seat would be full. And the first person that walks in off the street and wants to check out this church is going to go, whoop, they don't have room for me. And they're going to go on away. We have two services right now so that there are empty seats for people to fill them. And when those seats get filled, if we have to, we'll do a third service. And then if it gets beyond that, we're going to get another church somewhere and send them somewhere else. You know, no, we're seriously, That's why we do that. It's, you know, we kind of liked getting up late today, didn't we? You know, and preaching one time. It's cool. But we don't necessarily do what's best for us and most convenient for us. We're doing what we believe this community needs. And I believe this community is going to fill these chairs at 8 o'clock and at 10:45. And that we're going to have a third service one day. I believe that with all my heart. But we want, that's why we've started doing these family fun nights this summer. That's why we tell you about small groups all the time. That's why we encourage you to come and worship together on a weekly basis, because we need to be committed to being connected to each other. And then we have another tool that I was kind of hoping we could unveil today, but part of it isn't going to be ready for another day or two, so I'm going to show it to you next week, but I'm going to tell you about it today. And that is an app for your phone or tablet or whatever that is a Bustai Church of God application. And Jared Brown has spent this summer designing this app. Been sitting up there in the cubby hole like he is right now, and he has been working diligently to put this app together. And I'm excited. I can't wait to see it, but the part of it that's not available to see yet is the one that I'd have to have to see. So I can't see it for a couple days, but I want to tell you what it's going to be able to do and how it's going to be able to connect us. On that app, you would be able to read news articles like you can on our website, but you can do it from your phone. You could read blog posts, if I ever get back to doing blog posts again, which hopefully I will. You can view upcoming events to find out, no matter where you're at, you can just bring it up real easily and know exactly what's going on. You can read our newsletter there. You could subscribe to the newsletter from your phone. You can complete sermon notes on Sunday morning on your app and then email it to yourself if you want to have a hard copy or save it somewhere for yourself. You can listen to audio sermons on that phone. So if you're having trouble sleeping at night, just put your headphones on and boom, you know, it'll all be taken care of. You can view prayer projects, prayer requests on this. You can submit prayer requests on this app. You can fill out your response card on your phone instead of having to write on it with a pen. Some of you go, yes, I hate writing with things with a pen. So you can do that with your card. But we're not going to, you know, when we tell you it's a blue card, that's going to mess you up, because if your phone's not blue, you know, that's going to be hard for some of you. But you can do that. So you can update, you can submit contact information, you can sign up for events, you can share your next steps or comments about the service, you can request info on different topics. And these are just kind of, these were the things Jared was able to just kind of come up with off the top of his head. There may be more in the future, but that's what this app is going to be able to do. And next week, bring your phone, because we're going to take some time and have you open that up and see it. I'm not going to be here next week, but these guys are going to do that. So bring your phone next week, and we'll show you that. But folks, I want to come back as we wrap this up to what I said at the very beginning when I had my It's a Wonderful Life moment. What would this community be like if Bustai Church of God had never been, if those four families had not had that vision? What would our community say if something tragic happened, like what happened at First Church of God and our building completely burned down, the whole thing was gone? What would our community's reaction be? What would be, if they were to write an epitaph for a tombstone for our church, what would it say? Well, here's what I hope that it would say. That Bustai Church of God was a church that did whatever it took to love their neighbor in the same way they love themselves. You know what the ironic thing is? If we do that, there won't be an epitaph to write, because this church will never die, because our surrounding community will make sure of it. So, you got those blue cards? Pull them out. I told you last night I'm going to hold you to the fire this week. Some of you don't really do it. You just think, that's not really for me. I don't really have to do that. I want everybody, Dan Schwab, to fill these cards out, okay, right now. Pull them out. Get your pens. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you think you are. Pull out your card, and I want you to fill these out. And on the back of it, I want you to let us know how you're going to be involved in making this vision a reality. So maybe the first box is what you want to check. I want to be involved in serving the terminally ill and or families in our church. Not necessarily terminally ill families, but maybe that is the case. And here's what I'm good at. And I don't, this isn't the time to go, oh, shucks, I'm not good to anything, you know, really. You know what you're good at. You know what you love to do. Tell us. So that when that need arises, we can send you a text, an email, pick up the phone and say, hey, could you help us with this? Here's the need, and I know you're really good at this. Could you help us with this? And there might be some times when you can't, but I'm hoping there'll be more times when you can. The second one is, I'm going to participate in the Be Rich campaign. Hey, look, it's money's tight right now for us, but here's what I want to suggest to you. If you say there's no way, and you know there's no way I can come up with another $39.95, because I don't want you to take this out of your tithe. This has got to be up and above. And if it's not, don't do it. But here's how I want you to treat it. If you're going, I don't know where I'd come up with that $39.95, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pray today. Say, God, I'm going to check this box, and I'm going to trust you for an extra $39.95 that I don't know where it's coming from. I'm not expecting it. I don't have it planned to spend. My wife just not too long ago found a $20 bill laying in a parking lot. Man, you're halfway home right there, right? So just ask God to just put it in your lap. And you know what? I promise you he will. And when he does, on that day when you bring your $39.95, don't just drop it in the basket. Tell us that story of how God provided that money. So I hope everybody checks this box and trusts God for an extra $39.95. And then the third thing, and I got real specific with this, because I just think this has so much potential, but I would be willing to adopt one of the Upward teams. And I'd be willing to come for those weeks to their practice and their game and cheer them on and build a relationship with those families. Because here's the deal, folks. If we want to attach ourselves to Jesus' name, we need to study his life and live the same. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, we know that your plans for us are greater than anything we can imagine. I'm sure this just scratches the surface of what you're envisioning. And so, God, I hope this multiplies. I hope it expands. But God, let's start here and do what I know that you want us to do, so that we can discover the joy that you have for us. And I pray this in your name. Amen.